all those reasons for hope we talked about last week on the podcast here on the Rebel Room, well, now there is some concrete evidence behind it. UNLV hangs with USC for a while, 43-21 loss, but 19-14 at halftime, led for a little bit in the first half. I think all in all, not too many Rebel fans are coming out of this one disappointed. I'm Case Kiefer, joined as always by Ray Brewer and Mike Grimala. And Grimala, you were there at the Coliseum. Am I being a little too optimistic, or what did you think? What were your biggest takeaways?
No, I think this is a reason for optimism. It's, if aside from actually winning the game, this was about as good as it was probably going to get for UNLV. They played well on defense, I think better than pretty much anyone expected them to play. They got some help from JT Daniels, USC quarterback, who is not accurate early on, and that helped UNLV settle in a little bit defensively. But I thought they played well. They got pressure on the quarterback. They got off the field. They made some short field stops when the offense or special teams put them in bad situations. They held USC to field goals. And then offensively, UNLV not consistent throughout the day. They really couldn't get the passing game going, but they ran for over 300 yards. They got an explosive play from Lexington Thomas. They got a big play on a fake punt. They got an Armani Rogers touchdown pass. Aside from winning the game, I thought that was pretty much you couldn't expect anything more from UNLV. And after the game, everyone from Tony Sanchez to the players seemed pretty pleased with the way things went. And they weren't trying to preach the moral victory thing, but you know that's probably how they felt and how they took it, and they seemed to be happy with the way that things went.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Obviously, I watched from home, but two things that stood out, and I need you to verify this real fast. It seemed like there was a ton of Vegas people at the game. Was that my eyes deceiving me, and could we get those people to go to Sam Boyd this week?
You know, people kept saying, I saw on social media a lot of people referencing that there was like a UNLV section or sections at the Coliseum because they kept showing it on TV maybe. I was looking around the stadium, and I couldn't find the UNLV section. It might have been on the same side of the stadium as the press box, and that's why I couldn't see it. But no, I couldn't see like the UNLV section, but I did hear that they were, you know, prominently displayed on TV or whatever, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, and for me, that was cool that so many fans – granted, it was a perfect setup, right? Three-day weekend, easy drive, everybody wants to be in California. But that for me, stood out. Obviously, the game, UNLV's rush attack, Lexington Thomas broke one loose. Charles Williams had my guy, one carry, 15 yards. Armani ran. They were able to do some of the things they wanted to do. They picked up some first downs. They were very, very competitive. I think you have to feel good about UNLV coming out of this game. Rodgers only threw for 97 yards. I text you about that. Are you worried that they only completed, you know, half of their passes and only got 97 yards, especially considering they had two touchdowns?
No, that was a big question mark coming into this year because Armani Rodgers, he was not accurate as a freshman. He's 52% for the year, and that was one of the focal points for the team coming into the season. They wanted him to be more accurate. We didn't see it in week one, but I kind of give him a pass for that. USC, the defensive backs, they played a really good game. UNLV's receivers did not get a lot of separation. Like, if you go back and watch those plays, there weren't a lot of plays on those incompletions where it's a guy running open and Armani throws it, you know, below his knees or out of reach or behind it. It's not like he was throwing inaccurate passes. It's just those guys were covered, and he had to force the ball into some tight spots. And then also UNLV, they tried to attack the deep part of the field. They tried to go over the top with some long passes, and those are always low-percentage passes. And, you know, they were inches away from completing a couple of those. So I think it's mostly the opponent and the matchup and circumstances. I don't think Armani played as bad as the numbers may indicate. That's what Tony Sanchez said in his Monday morning press conference. He said, you know, kind of throw the completion percentage out the window for that game. I think that is more important this coming week against UTEP. That's a team where UNLV receivers should be able to get open. They should be able to give him easier targets. So you want to see him with a better completion percentage, more efficient offensively this week. But against USC, you got to kind of give him a pass for that low rate.
Yeah, maybe giving him too long of a leash, but I am going to echo what Mike said and agree that I don't think this is any cause for concern. I know some people were worried about Armani coming out of camp too, but you know, where there's a talent discrepancy, it's going to show in a thing like the secondary. So Marmani might not have had many people to throw to, not a lot of open guys. I think it's also been not discussed a lot that he did have some success on the ground, at least it looks like from the numbers, 82 yards. But more than anything, I think going into this game, we talked about it last week, we talked about it all offseason. You know, there's just more of an onus on the defense to show some improvement than the offense. I'm just not worried about the offense once they get into Mountain West play, once they play teams like UTEP. They're a 24-point favorite this week. And defensively, I know it's hard to say when you'd still give up 43 points, but I think we saw enough to say, okay, the defense is going to look improved. I believe Mike's follow-up story had a nugget about how it looked, they had better pass rush, and that's such a big thing. They have been so – they've just gotten no pressure for the entire Sanchez era, and I know it's frustrated him, and that seems like that's going to be a an area where they improve. One thing that still might a little bit concern me is we talked about JT Daniels got off to a slow start, yet you still look at the end of the game and his numbers are still pretty impressive. He threw for over 8 yards an attempt, almost 300 yards with a slow start. We saw something out of the pass rush, but is the secondary still grading out below average, you think, after this game?
Well, it's interesting. He threw JT Daniels threw for 282 yards, and I believe 130-something of those yards came in the fourth quarter. And something that Tony Sanchez brought up in his press conference after the game, or his Monday press conference, was that depth is something UNLV has been trying to create since he has taken over. He's now in his fourth year, and they've never had depth on the roster in terms of, you know, they've never had 80 Division I caliber players that can rotate in and out and play credibly and give you a chance to compete. He said this year is the first time they feel confident with their defensive line that they've got 8 or 9 players who can rotate in. And you saw that against USC. They were, I think USC had 73 offensive snaps, and Tony Sanchez said the highest snap count for any defensive lineman was 50-something. So they were doing a good job of rotating the defensive line and keeping those guys fresh. But the defensive backfield is still thin in that area, and some of those guys played the entire game. Jericho Flowers got beat for a long touchdown in the fourth quarter, but he played the entire game, and it's sort of tough to keep up with a team like USC that's got so many wide receivers that are, you know, 3, 4, 5-star athletes that they're just shuttling in and out of the game and staying fresh, and you've got Jericho Flowers and the rest of the defensive backs, you know, playing the entire game and asking them to cover down the field. And I think you just saw them wear down as the game went on, and it really showed in the fourth quarter, and that's when JT Daniels was able to get a little more loose, throw some of those deep passes. There's sometimes the deep balls are easier to complete. You know, you're not thinking as much. You're not, like, reading the defense. You're not anticipating. You're just sort of picking out a receiver and, you know, trying to lead him downfield. And they hit in a couple of those, and it just sort of shook everything loose. UNLV was worn down. So the defensive backs, you need depth. And the interesting thing is Alex Perry, who transferred in from Arizona State, he is eligible now by the NCAA, and he has cleared concussion protocol. So he's expected to play this week. And that gives them another defensive back who can give them that depth. He was good in the training camp, and he looks like if he's not the third, even, you know, number two or number three guy, he should see a lot of snaps this week.
Yeah, and I covered Alex when he played for Gorman. He was a kid who played varsity 4 years, contributed all 3 years. His last 3 years, they won undefeated, won 3 mythical national championships, and that's big-time talent that's going to help UNLV. So Saturday, 6 o'clock, Sanboy Stadium. UTEP comes in. The Miners lost at home to Northern Arizona. So as we've talked about pretty much all summer, schedule sets up good for the Rebels. And I think that this is a great opportunity to continue to build some confidence, because this is an opponent that you could soundly beat. And if you could get a nice win at home in front of your home people, Case, are you smiling? Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree at all, though. There's just a thing, and this isn't you, but just any time the words soundly beat and UNLV are in the same sentence, it just makes you cringe a little bit. I know they're a 24-point favorite. I know UTEP is terrible. UNLV's a lot better. I still just the history of this program just concerns me a little bit. Is that unfair?
No, I totally agree. UNLV has proven since you've been in Las Vegas almost 10 years and since I've been a child 42 years that they're inconsistent in winning. And when you take a team that has never been to consecutive bowl games, that experiences not only losing seasons consistently, but seasons where they have to scratch for 1 and 2 wins, to use the word soundly to a team that just doesn't have that winning culture is tough. And even though we think that they're on their way to being a consistently 500 program, which for UNLV, we talk every year, you win seven games, Grimal and Kiefer, you're like, they're putting you in the school hall of fame. That's what the bar is. And to use the word soundly beat, no matter what the line is, we all remember the Howard game. We all remember when Houck was the coach and they lost to Southern Utah and when they lost to Northern Arizona. And then they barely beat Idaho State at home, and they barely beat Northern – no, they killed Idaho State. They barely beat Northern Colorado. So to say, hey, they got this team coming in, home opener, they're going to get a sure thing W, of course it's a stretch, but it sure in the heck looks like that.
Yeah, I'm with you on the in terms of how confident can you be in UNLV beating a team that they're supposed to beat. And, yeah, you say they're the 24-point favorite, and there is some trepidation. I do think that this team, based on what we've seen through training camp and what we saw in week one, I do believe that this is a good team. This is a 6 or 7 win team. And this is absolutely a game that if you're a good team, you come out and win this game against UTEP. You beat them by 30 points. You beat them by 40 points. I believe UTEP has the longest losing streak in the nation at this point. It wouldn't be a Howard-level collapse, but it would be right up there. I don't think you have to worry about it. The UTEP is – they can't run the ball. I think that's probably UNLV's biggest weakness at this point is probably the run defense. UTEP's not going to be able to take advantage of that. UNLV should – this is a game they should run for 350, 400 yards easily, just sort of racking up total offense. Yeah, I don't see much reason for worry. This is a game that UNLV should and probably will win easily.
Yeah, I mean, there – I'm not just saying this just because of the line, but there is honestly as big of a talent discrepancy in this game as there was for USC going up against UNLV. It's really hard, you know, looking at the rosters and looking how bad UTEP's been to imagine UNLV struggling in this game. But again, it's just UNLV, so I'm a little worried. What specifics? I know we talked about how they should roll, and you got to look for them to win big here to show that they're improved. But what specifically, what are some areas that we need to look at? What should the expectations be going into this game?
Well, if you start parsing things, then, I mean, offensively, third down, Armani Rodgers, can he complete passes that move the chains and get you a new set of downs? They were 5 of 15 on third down against USC. They love their long passing game. They want to be a vertical passing team. But those third and mediums, you know, third and six, third and seven, you don't feel good about handing it off. You don't want to take a shot deep down the field. Can Armani Rodgers complete those intermediate passes against a team like UTEP where there should be open receivers all around the field? The plays that UNLV runs, their pass plays should work. They should be able to block and give him time to throw. So can he just be accurate and keep the chains moving? That's probably the biggest thing on offense that you're looking for. Defensively, I would say run defense. Can the UNLV's defensive linemen get off blocks? Can they fill the holes? Can the linebackers come up to the line of scrimmage and stuff runs at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage? They should be able to make a lot of plays in this game. USC, I think, had 9 runs of 12 yards or longer, which is statistically considered a long run. So that's a lot. That's a lot for one game. UTEP, you know, if you can hold them to 1 or maybe 2 long runs and, you know, keep them under 4 yards of carry for the game, that would be a good sign. So those are probably the two main things, if you want to get specific, what I would be looking for out of UNLV in this game. Aside from the final score, that's what you want to see.
Yeah, I think, and I don't want to beat a drum again, but I think this is a great chance for UNLV to show those improvements, right? We've talked about the improvements. We've seen some of the improvements. Go out and play a complete game and set yourself up for a game at Arkansas State, which, you know, could be winnable. I think this is a good opportunity for UNLV to continue its growth.
Yeah, if you just look at the schedule, you've got UTEP this week, Prairie View, A&M next week. UNLV, your goal right now is to get to 2-1 heading into that Arkansas State game. That gives you wiggle room to lose it. You know, and it puts you in a position where if you win it, that you're pretty much almost assured of a bowl game at that point if you come out of this non-conference 3-1. So get to that game 2-1, and you're looking pretty good. You're right on schedule.
Yeah, I didn't realize Brewer all offseason, not to look too far ahead, but has been calling that Arkansas State game a win. We argued about it. I disagreed. I don't even think you used your best argument you could have used for that, is that Arkansas State has Alabama this week and then goes to Tulsa. They could be a little bit beat up by the time they play UNLV. I think UNLV has a much more manageable schedule going in. So you've seen this team now. Have your expectations changed at all? Are you still on the same path?
Well, I think that's a bad question for me because I had them at 8 wins, and I'm always optimistic. I'll let Mike have the final word.
Well, I had them at 6 wins before the season. I had them at 5-6 going into the final week and then beating UNR to get to 500 and qualify for a bowl berth. After seeing USC, there's probably another game in the schedule. If they play as well as they did in week one, if you play that same caliber of game again, that gives you a chance at Arkansas State. That might give you a chance at home against Fresno State, which are two games I had them losing. So, I mean, I could see them – I could bump them up to 7 wins, and I don't think that would be pushing it. So, yeah, that did change me a little bit. I go from 6-6 to 7-5 now.
Wow, all right. I'm going to stick strong with 6-6, but I did like the quote you used in your story and I saw was well-circulated, was Tony Sanchez's 12 winnable games on the schedule. So does that mean he's calling for 11-1 at this point?
I think he's saying they have a shot at 11. I think that was just his way of saying, that's sticking it to people who gave them no chance going into USC and sort of considering that, just you're playing that game for the money and you're going in there to take a beating and sort of work out the kinks. But yeah, you're down 19-14 going into the fourth quarter. That's a winnable game, and I think he takes a lot of pride in that.
Yeah, no, I really liked that message. I was just joking. And it goes back to, I think, what Ray has said over and over again on this podcast, that UNLV needs to instill some confidence. Every little thing you can do, even if it's just something like that, I think is big. So it's going to be interesting to see. 6 o'clock Saturday, UNLV hosting UTEP. Interested to see what the crowd will be like. Usually a little bit better for the first game. And if the Rebels fans showed up in L.A., why not show up in Las Vegas? I think we're all pretty confident that UNLV will walk away with a win here. The only question is how many points. And either way, we'll be back next Monday to discuss and break down how the Rebels performed in Game 2. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening.